Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing financial lessons learned during COVID.
Yeah, Joel, it's safe to say that our lives look a lot different now than they did at the beginning of the year. You know, a lot of our personal finances have really taken a hit. A lot of our incomes are maybe a good bit lower than they used to be. This pandemic that we've lived through has certainly taught us a lot of lessons. And the thing is, these are lessons that we knew to be true before, but the coronavirus has heightened, you know, our awareness of these truths and the impact that they have on our lives. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, man. We're going to talk through these different lessons that you and I that we've learned, that others have learned during this time of financial stress.
Yeah, Matt. And it's been said that those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
I've heard that before.
Right? Yeah, it's a popular phrase. And so I think, yeah, if we don't learn these lessons, if we don't kind of document them, discuss them, and basically learn from what we've gone through, right? I mean, we are learning a lot on the health front that is going to hopefully help us in the case of, you know, a potential future pandemic, which I hope never happens because this one's been pretty horrible in and of itself. But there are financial lessons that we should all be learning and we should put to use for our future, because I think it can help us weather upcoming storms, hopefully not pandemic storms in our financial future, but other financial storms that we are going to go through because they inevitably happen in life to all of us at one point or another. But before we get to that, Matt, I think a couple of weeks ago I mentioned a new Powerline internet solution that we purchased for homeschooling to help increase the internet in our house. And I'm sure people have heard of this on the show before, but you know, Emily and I, our family, we basically live in this duplex that we used to have somebody living in the back of our house, and now we've kind of taken it all over, but we still have this kitchen in the back, like a second kitchen, and we're five people. We don't need two kitchens. Almost nobody actually needs two kitchens.
This is our breakfast kitchen, and lunch and dinner kitchen is up front.
Yeah, that sounds like something a fancy person would have, right?
You are pretty fancy.
That's true. But yeah, so this kitchen, basically, it's used as storage. Like, we put our bikes back there and stuff right now, and we realized, man, this is a perfect space to try to do homeschooling with the kids. And so I'm in the process of ripping everything out of the kitchen and selling off everything I can and just making it a conducive space to do homeschooling. And it's something that we probably wouldn't have thought about, and we probably would have just left it as is for a while longer were it not for this realization that, like, we need extra space. We can't just be doing everything in the girls' bedrooms. They already share a bedroom. If we put all the schooling in there plus their toys, I mean, it's going to be a cluster.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm curious to know kind of what our listeners are doing and maybe what you're doing too. Like, I'm sure so many people are reconsidering the space in their home for how they're going to do childcare and schooling and all that kind of stuff, because we're all in a completely different boat right now.
Yeah, man. And, you know, that's something that a lot of families here in Atlanta, I guess LA, just other cities where schools are not opening in person, where they're only opening virtually or online this fall. But the thing is, in order to do that, you have to have somebody to help facilitate that, someone to watch the kids actually during the day. And I mean, you and I, our families are in a position where our wives, it's maybe a little old school, but we're lucky enough to have them be stay-at-home moms. Those are some decisions that we have proactively made. But what that means is that we're lucky enough to have someone to oversee and facilitate that learning while the kids are at home. But man, we know that that is not the case for everyone. There's a lot of individuals who, you know, where both parents need to work, or if it's a single parent household, like, that parent has to go back to work, and they're in a tough position to where they're having to figure out what childcare looks like for them as they go back to work, you know? And the thing is, not very many employers are offering any type of, like, backup childcare or any additional benefits to help take care of those situations.
Yeah, sure. That's a stressful place to be in, especially if you have to go into a physical location to work. If you're working from home, that's hard enough, right, to multitask and do both. But if you actually have to hop in the car, go somewhere for work, how in the world, if you're a single parent or both parents have to go into work, do you even come close to making sure your kid's taken care of? We talked about pod schooling a while back, and that's one thing that some people are considering. And I think that can be helpful, a small group of people and in your community doing school together with other kids that are in the same class or same grade. I think, too, it's really important for a lot of parents right now to petition their boss, to talk to someone in HR and see what's available, and to see if that company is willing to make more resources available when it comes to childcare. because obviously we were all just kind of winging it at the end of the school year last year. But at this point, I think employers have had enough time to kind of put some thought into, okay, well, I'm asking you to come back to work. I need you to be this productive. But at the same time, the options are pretty slim when it comes to how you handle childcare. And so, yeah, I think employers do have a role to play in this conversation. And as an employee, I think you have every right to ask for your employer to help be a part of the solution in that case.
Yeah. And personally, what I wouldn't want to see is like an employer trying to create their own daycare. but instead, like you kind of hinted at this, but like just compensation, right? Like additional funds, additional money that's kind of earmarked for childcare, you know, and then allow the individual employees to figure out what is going to work best for them. Because maybe for someone, they were going to have a parent come and watch the kids, the grandkids. But knowing that there's compensation involved might make that decision a lot easier. It's not a matter of having to create this daycare program there on site or something crazy like that. Although some employers are doing that, but I think it would be more efficient and just a smarter use of time and money if you're able to leave it up to the individual. But yeah, I couldn't agree more though. Just to advocate for what it is that you need, because you know, I mean, in the end, it's sort of supply and demand, right? Like if employers are seeing that, man, a lot of employees are demanding this, there's this other employer that is offering this. Well, you know, those employees are going to see that that's a benefit that another company offers, and they don't want to lose those great employees. You know, it's expensive to train and recruit, rehire employees.
Yeah. And at the very least, I think if your employer isn't doing anything to help you out on the childcare front, you need to start the conversation now based on kind of what your school is doing, whether your kid's going back to school or whether your kid is homeschooling for the fall. You need to have that conversation now about what your work days look like and what the level of productivity expectation can be. And employers are definitely going to have to be flexible on that front. I know if I was a single parent with two kids at home going to school, trying to work as well, my productivity would suffer greatly. And I would hope that my employer would be understanding. And that's a conversation I think that needs to start now if it hasn't already.
Yeah, the sooner the better for sure on that. Let's go ahead and introduce our beer for this episode, man. We are having Modus Vivendi, and this is by The Wild Beer Company. And I'm looking forward to sharing our thoughts on this one, buddy, at the end of the episode.
Yeah, this brewery's out of the UK. Looking forward to having a foreign beer on today's episode.
British beer.
Yeah. So, all right, but let's get on to the topic at hand. Financial lessons learned during COVID. Matt, I don't think any of us ever expected to live through a pandemic. It wasn't on my radar.
Nope.
I know my mom was reading books about Ebola back in the 90s. And,
oh, really?
And
well, she's a nurse.
She's a nurse. So
yeah,
she's like
kind of upper alley.
Yeah, she's interested in that stuff. And so I was always like, all right, cool. That sounds like it's like a Grisham novel or something like that. But it never felt like it could actually be reality. But it is our reality right now, right? The current health crisis has had this domino-like effect on so many other areas of our lives. We just talked about childcare, but of course, finances as well. Some of our listeners have filed for unemployment for the first time. Others have been furloughed, and others have just kind of seen what's happening around them and felt this keen sense of a need to save more money, right? And so today on the show, Matt, you and I, we're going to share some of the financial lessons that really seem to stick out like a sore thumb due to the impact of COVID on our lives. Because again, there are things we can take away. There are lessons we can learn that are going to help improve our financial trajectory from today moving forward.
Yeah, man. And, you know, some of these lessons we're going to discuss, they are probably some that you've thought of already because, you know, like, how could you not? Especially if you've, you know, listened to the show for a while. But there are going to be some other financial lessons that we're going to share that might feel brand new to you. But the impact of COVID has certainly taught us all a good bit. There are some broader macro money lessons that we've learned as a whole society. But we're going to stick mostly to, you know, personal finance in this episode because that's what we do, man. That's what we talk about.
Yeah, for sure. Matt, I think one of the first lessons that we need to mention that sticks out to me that I've learned through going through a pandemic was that emotions influence how we handle money in just a major way. Human emotion can be this simultaneously wonderful and terrible thing. Emotions can create the most beautiful feelings that lead to wonderful action, right? Like an incredible piece of art. Often those are inspired by an overwhelming emotion, right? But it can also lead us to eat a whole pint of ice cream in one sitting. I know you're eating all the ice cream though in one sitting, Matt, if that happens to you.
I have been known to lack some self-control when it comes to eating ice cream, especially the good Aldi stuff.
Right. But yeah, we're all dealing with a lot right now from the pandemic. Racial injustice is a real issue in our country right now. And it's an election year. So emotions are running high. And because of that, many of us are dealing with wider emotional swings. And it's just to me, it's so clear that the emotions that are happening around us, interpersonal emotions too, Matt, with people that we're close to, it's harder on parent-child relationships. It's harder on partner relationships right now. And I think the increased emotional tension is affecting the way people actually handle their dollars and cents too.
Yeah, like you mentioned, even on a personal level, right? You know, like we just talked about childcare difficulties at the top of the show, but even that can create higher psychological distress levels. You know, our emotions can cause us to follow these different urges, to maybe spend more money or to sell stocks in a panic. Even just being aware of the fact that emotion can wreak havoc on our finances, that can help us to take solid action to do something hopefully differently and something that's a little bit more smart. You might just need to reframe things mentally, or you know, you might need a trusted friend to talk you off the ledge before maybe making a harmful money move.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to recognize kind of the emotion that's overtaken us until we've made the poor decision. Until we see the empty ice cream pint on the couch next to us, we're like, oh yeah, that's what happened. And that's just common for so many of us. It's hard to see it coming on. It's hard to know that the emotion is overtaking us and is leading to disastrous results. And so, yeah, I think, Matt, kind of putting things in place that can help you realize those emotions, having, like you said, someone to bounce something off of so you don't make a catastrophic money move in a particularly emotional time is incredibly beneficial.
Yeah.
And then, right, if you've made a bad financial move, I feel like that then feeds into feeling more stressed. And it becomes this kind of perpetuating cycle if we can't stop it. And over time, like, money insecurity leads to poor mental health. Matt, we've talked about this on the show before, but not having a solid financial foundation leads to increased levels of stress. And that studies then show that your IQ decreases by about a dozen points when your stress levels go up. There are very few of us who perform better at work and make better financial decisions when our brains feel fried. And so I just think that's where a lot of people are right now. And it's so, so important to realize the impact that emotions can have on the way that we handle our money, because they have so much more power than we typically realize. And on a personal finance show, Matt, we're talking about the steps or the numbers, but emotion plays such a huge part of how we handle our personal finances. And I think that needs to be acknowledged. And it's something that more people in the personal finance sphere should be talking about.
Yeah, that's a lot of talk about emotions in our minds, right? But, you know, we do feel that that's an important place to start, because so much of personal finance has to do with what goes on inside of our heads. It's not just about knowing the right actions and right steps to take. You know, it's not just about the tips and tricks. Psychology and our human behavior, that plays a large role. You know, now that we've covered all of that, let's go ahead and get to some more of these maybe more tangible financial lessons that we've learned due to COVID. And we'll get to those right after the break.
We're back from the break. We're talking about financial lessons that we've learned during the pandemic. And Matt, let's talk about some of the takeaways that we've had. Things that we knew, but things that have become even more apparent of their level of importance. And one thing I think that just sticks out like a sore thumb, probably the thing that most people are feeling right now, is the importance of having a solid emergency fund, of having cash on hand, right? Even though I think over the last 10 years in particular, the idea of having more cash in the bank has become downplayed. A lot of people were prone to prod you to invest that money, because why are you letting it sit around in savings earning very little, right? Especially as the stock market has been performing incredibly well. It just became more popular to frown on holding cash in those savings accounts. But then having money in the bank, a minimum of roughly $2,500, but you know, you and I are fans of people having 6+ months of living expenses in the bank that they have liquid access to. It became so much more vital as Americans were no longer able to work and earn an income. So many Americans, I think 50% of Americans, the last I saw, had their income negatively affected because of the pandemic, whether that was a full-on job loss or even just being able to earn less because of what's happening.
Yeah, and having cash on hand, essentially what we're talking about here is an emergency fund, right? And hopefully you rarely need to tap that emergency fund, but if you do, it is important to have a financial fire drill in place. Knowing how you'll respond to different financial scenarios, that can take the stress down quite a bit. Even if you're barely saving any money currently, knowing what and how much you can cut back if times get tough, that's going to be comforting to you. You know, man, for us, I know that like we typically spend around $400 every month just to go out to eat. But I know that we don't need to do that. every month, we also put a set amount towards saving for Christmas gifts, as well as vacation every year. But again, I know that if we were in a tight spot, we could hit pause and get by on a whole lot less. And so having that plan and knowing how it is that we could cut back, you know, just knowing that there's some wiggle room there, that definitely gives me some peace of mind.
Yeah, I think in middle school or something like that, Matt, we were supposed to kind of figure out our house, how we would escape in the event of a fire. And I totally remember that, right? Like, we were supposed to meet as a family in one particular area. This is the best way to get out of the house, all that kind of stuff. And that's a good exercise to go through as a family to actually think about what would happen in the event of a legitimate fire in your house. But I agree, doing something similar with your finances and thinking through, okay, if stuff hits the fan, what do we do? And what are the first things that we cut immediately? What could our budget look like? What could we live on? That's so, so helpful. And having that financial fire drill in place is something I think so many people would benefit from.
Yeah, man. And you know, what's interesting too is that we've seen people make changes to their spending. I think even if they haven't really thought through, you know, what steps they could take. We've seen because of the pandemic that upping your savings rate by spending less, that it's almost always possible. Hopefully a lesson our country has learned from the pandemic is that we don't need to spend as much as we are actually guilty of spending. The recent increased savings rate numbers, man, that's evidence that it actually can be done. As job losses piled up, there were just millions of people getting laid off in an incredibly short period of time. But at the same time, we saw the savings rate in America that it was actually increasing. That is in large part because we couldn't go out and spend money like we usually would. And that has led to a realization for many that we can get by spending less and that our budgets are more in our control than, you know, we sometimes think.
Yeah. So another lesson learned, upgrading your savings rate by spending less is almost always possible. I feel like that's one of the most common excuses when people talk about personal finance. It's, I can't cut anymore. Like, there's nothing left. And for so many people, that's just not the case. We found that out. And if you actually look at your budget and you actually comb through your credit card bills and you see what you're spending money on every single month, I guarantee there's something that 95%+ of us could find that doesn't need to be there, or a bill that can be slashed in some way, form, or fashion. And so, yeah, upping your savings rate, it's almost always possible. I think that's something that we've learned. As we've seen, like you said, historic job losses, and yet savings rates increases across the board at the same time. Another lesson, though, Matt, that we've learned during the pandemic is that prioritizing debt payoff is almost never a bad idea. And I do stress almost, and I'm going to get to that in just a second why. But yeah, working towards not having debt is this foundational personal finance principle, right? At the core of wealth building, it's in the fact that we need to be earning interest and not paying it out to the banks. That puts us in a tough position, right? And so you and I, we're fans of helping people think through debt payoff in order to get in a stronger financial position. But at the same time, while eliminating debt is so helpful to a person's financial journey, it's actually even more important when the infected respiratory droplets hit the fan, right? The entire country stays at home and you lose your job. So like, while student loan deferments and other programs to postpone debt payments, they've been nice, but think about how much better it would be if you didn't have those loans altogether, if you had come up with a plan to pay off those debts quickly. But I did say that the lesson was that it's almost never a bad idea, right? So on the flip side, eliminating that emergency fund that we just talked about in order to get rid of your debt more quickly places too high of a priority on debt elimination in most cases. Because in the event of job loss, it's nice, of course, to not have a student loan payment. It's nice, of course, to not have a mortgage. But if you paid those off quickly at the expense of having any cash in the bank to weather you through any sort of storm, that is, I would say, when you've put maybe a little too much emphasis on the debt payoff thing.
Right. Yeah. Top priority is maintaining that emergency fund, having that cushion, having that financial margin. Another lesson that we've learned, man, from the pandemic is that no career is completely solid. Man, and this is a lesson that I can speak to from personal experience. Kate and I, we began shooting weddings full time back in 2008. And at the time, business grew like crazy, man. Like, we quickly realized that, like, wow, this is an industry that is basically recession-proof. No matter what is going on with the economy, people continue to get married, even during the Great Recession. But, you know, while the wedding industry is recession-proof, it's definitely not pandemic-proof. Needless to say, there have been many, many weddings that have been canceled or postponed, which also means that there have been many wedding professionals who have had their income canceled or postponed. So thankfully, man, if you know, in our case, we're doing fine. Over the years, we've transitioned to taking on fewer weddings, and we have diversified our income through real estate and even side gigs like podcasting. But it's important to develop alternate ways to make a living. And ideally, again, you're doing this before you actually need it, because sometimes if you're going to wait until you need it, it's a little bit too late.
Yeah, it makes me think about a long time ago when we had Jordan Harbinger on the show, and he gives the example of digging the well before you're thirsty. He specifically talks about networking, right? And how having those contacts before you lose your job or before you go through a tough career situation, that having those relationships and staying in contact with people that can be influential in your future job decisions is so clutch. And I love that idea. I also love that idea of digging that well before you're thirsty when it comes to having multiple streams of income. Matt, if you hadn't thought about that years ago, if you weren't working towards a more diversified way of earning money, you'd probably be going through a really, really difficult time right now, seeing a lot of those weddings basically just vanish, dry up.
Yeah, so true, man.
Yeah, so I just would encourage everybody out there to know that their career, as solid as they might have thought it was, the industry, maybe that was recession-proof, or maybe they're the number one producer at their job, but that industry has been affected just in a massive way right now, and maybe they're not on solid footing anymore. Realizing that your career, that no career is completely solid, is definitely, I think, one of the lessons that we've learned during this pandemic. And it's something that we can take to heart, and we can make changes to actually strengthen our personal finances in the future. And ultimately, maybe it's just a call to say, be a little clear-eyed about this and don't just assume that the job that you're in is going to continue to provide for you no matter what. It's important for you to have a plan, even for the unlikeliest of situations.
Yeah, I like what you said, man, about your specific job. You might feel pretty secure about that. You know, you might feel really good about your specific company. But aside from whether or not your specific company is doing well, like the industry as a whole might collapse, you know, like it did for us. And so, man, at the heart of it, what we're talking about here is diversification of income. But after the break, we're going to talk about diversification in another way. We're going to talk about it in your portfolio, in what it is that you invest in. And we'll get to that right after the break.
We're back from the break. And of course, we're talking about the pandemic and how it has affected our finances. And there are some lessons that we can learn, and we can take those lessons and kind of implement them into how we begin to build our financial lives from today moving forward. And Matt, we just talked about how no career, no specific job is completely solid, right? And so it's important for us to be diversified when it comes to how we make money. But yeah, diversification in what we invest in is crucial too. The stock market was hammered, right, in March and April, and some individual stocks in particular are still feeling the pain, and they haven't recovered in the slightest. Other companies have seen increased demands for their products and services due to COVID, and the market is reflecting that, right? Their stocks are sky high, but who could have predicted these exact outcomes? Not you or I, Matt. I wouldn't have predicted Tesla's meteoric rise. And diversification in your investing is always key, because it is so hard for us as individuals, one, to know what's coming, and then two, to know how that's going to influence the markets and businesses and the demand for their services.
Yeah, that's right, man. And that's why we don't recommend single stock investing. We recommend buying the entire stock market, basically investing into the entire U.S. economy. Another lesson that we've learned due to the pandemic is that we need to invest for decades, not for years. You know, if you made any changes to your investments this past spring, maybe other than buying as much as you could, you need to rethink your investing time horizon. We wouldn't recommend investing money in the stock market unless you're willing to not touch it for 5 or, you know, ideally 7 years. If you're looking to the headlines and, you know, you're buying and selling stocks on a daily basis, that's not actually investing. It's just speculating.
Yeah, boy, and isn't that another lesson that we've learned in the COVID times, is that speculating can cause a lot of financial harm. There have been so many stories written about Robinhood trading and youngsters in particular getting into the stock market in this kind of tumultuous and volatile time. And so many of them, it looks like for a minute that they've just made a ton of money and then they get crushed. And you're right, Matt, that speculation, that is not investing. So another lesson we need to learn is what our investing strategy should be. And I think there's a quote from Warren Buffett that sums this up well. He says that we should be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And there will be volatility in the market. We've talked about that before. But we have to train ourselves to kind of see those drops as the market going on sale, not as a sign that we're going to lose everything and it's time to bail out of our investments. But at the same time, not buying individual stocks when they're on sale. Because if we do that, especially as so many people are doing right now, as kind of armchair investors without much knowledge going into the trades you're making on specific companies, that's when you put a whole lot of your personal wealth at risk.
Yeah, man. So those are some thoughts on investing, right? Another lesson that we've learned is that it is important for us to prepare for the inevitable. People are dying, man, you know, because of a virus that most of us didn't see coming. But we all know that, like, someday that we are going to die, right? And so making sure that we are preparing for that is important. This, you know, likely means that you need to make sure that you have a will and creating steps maybe for your significant other or your partner to know how to handle the finances if you were to die and that was, you know, one of the roles that you took on in your relationship. I mean, at the very least, it's important for them to know where the passwords are, you know, like for them to be able to log into the accounts that you jointly hold together. That way their personal finances can continue. That way their financial life doesn't get upended.
Yeah, man, that provides so much peace of mind in the here and now when things are kind of in a crazy state all around us. Knowing that you have a will in place, that you have life insurance, that you have access to those passwords, and that you've communicated well about, you know, the inevitable happening. It's such a healthy conversation to have, but nobody wants to have it because it's not fun. But it is one of those things that I think we've seen as a lesson is that it's important and it feels like it's even more important right now.
Yeah, so true. But like you said, it's not fun. Like, that's not a conversation my wife wants to hear me say. It's like, hey, when I die, here's how you can log into everything and make sure that you continue living your life, you know? But that doesn't mean it's any less important. Joel, one other lesson too that we've learned is that money, man, it's not everything. You know, the pandemic has, for many of us, helped us realize that while being financially secure through smart money management, it's great. But money does have its limits. Many of us have been separated from family and from friends, and hopefully a lot of us have realized that those relationships, that they mean so much more to us than having a padded bank account, than having all of our ducks lined up and where we're not having to worry about our finances quite as much. Relationships also mean a whole lot to us.
Yeah, and whether we've kept our job or we've had a pay cut, whatever position we're in, I think there's a lot for us to be thankful for and grateful for. Even if COVID has thrown kind of a wrench in our plans and a wrench specifically in some of our financial plans. I think also too, you know, money isn't everything. Yes, that's an important lesson to learn. And at the same time, being thankful for the good health that we'd have. I mean, I know I'm acutely aware of the fact that, you know, one, we haven't gotten COVID, and two, I've been able to enjoy my healthy body like during these times, going on bike rides with the kids. And when you look at the mounting cases of COVID and the people battling for their lives and many people having lost their lives, I think we've definitely learned that not taking our health for granted is important. We're not promised tomorrow, none of us, right? And so being thankful, having gratitude for what we currently do have in our lives, the relationships, but then also good health. That's certainly a lesson I want to learn and I want to kind of continue to implement in my life from here on out.
Yeah, I mean, COVID, it's impacted us all in different ways, but hopefully we've all learned some financial lessons in the midst of all of this insanity. You know, let's hope that we can make some meaningful changes based on what we've learned. And like you said at the beginning, Joel, it's important for us to cover these things in order that they stick and that we don't allow history to repeat itself. And unfortunately, you know, there are some of us who have learned these lessons the hard way. And so by talking about these lessons, hopefully we can help others to completely avoid them altogether in their lives.
Yeah, learn the lessons from listening to a podcast as opposed to going through incredibly difficult times and not being prepared. Yeah, so I think we can be more prepared based on these lessons. And of course, hopefully we don't encounter another pandemic, but financial pitfalls and difficulties and emergencies come up for all of us at different times.
Yeah,
and
they will happen.
They're going to happen. And we can be more prepared than we currently are. And I think these are just some of the ways that we can learn a lesson, implement some change, and make a difference for our future selves. All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on the show today. We drank a beer called Modus Vivendi by the Wild Beer Company out of the UK. I've actually had this one kind of stored away in my quote-unquote beer cellar, which means my kitchen pantry. Yeah, for like 2.5-3 years now.
Oh, no way.
But I decided to pop it out for this episode with you, man. What were your thoughts on it?
Sometimes you got to bust it out for a special occasion, like a podcast.
Or a not special occasion, just a random recording day.
Yeah, I will say this is a beer I've had before, and every time I have it, I really enjoy it. You know, it doesn't necessarily say on the bottle that it's a Flanders Red, but it drinks just like a Flanders Red ale.
For the non-beer nerds out there, let's just mention that Flanders Red is this incredibly tart beer with like a vinegar profile that is typically found in the Flanders region of Belgium.
Yeah, man. And that's exactly how I would describe this beer. You know, it was acidic and so it was nice and bright, but at the same time it had... it was aged in oak barrels, and so it had this kind of oaky tannin flavor that complemented the acidity very well. It's a flavor profile that I can always turn to, and I know that I'll enjoy. And this one in particular, Modus Vivendi by the Wild Beer Company, I feel that this is a perfect example of what this style should taste like. Really enjoyed it, buddy. Thank you for sharing. What were your thoughts on this one?
No, man, I totally agree. I really like this beer. I don't know why I held on to it for so long without drinking it, but now I'm glad I did. And yeah, I think too, what you said about it being aged in oak barrels, it so massively mellows the
right.
those harsher flavors. And I actually really like those harsher flavors, but when you mellow them out with the oak, I feel like it actually opens up a whole lot of other flavors that are going on in the beer. And it's not overpowering in its tartness because of the oak. So yeah, this was like expertly done, right? Because some people can make a Flanders Red and it can just be like a punch to the mouth. It can be a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah, or sometimes even not enough.
Yeah, either one. And I feel like, yeah, they kind of did hit it perfectly on this one. So yeah, I really like this beer.
Cool, man. Well, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners, you can find our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com.
And if you've been listening for a while, thanks so much. If you're a new listener, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you continue to get notifications of every episode that Matt and I put out. So, all right, Matt, that's going to do it for this one. Until next time, buddy. Best friends out.
Best friends out.